Lafondra looking to get close side of Font. Lafondra away from Davis. 3-1 Reading. 3 points Reading.
Hello and welcome to the Empire Rolls preview show, supported by Phantom Bruco. Well, it's been another positive week. It's quite enjoyable being a Reading fan at the moment. I mean, let's forget all the off-the-field stuff that hopefully magically will improve its stuff. At one point, Star put out a statement about their developments there, which we'll come on to in a moment. But I've been joined by Alex Everson this week, as James is unavailable. He's probably just living up the dream somewhere. Somewhere, I don't know, where do you reckon he is? New York or something, Alex?
I'm going to go with Australia, New Zealand, maybe Japan, Brazil, you know, somewhere exotic, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He's probably in Bangkok right now as we're recording this.
Got himself a nice 50p beer somewhere on the beach.
Probably. 30 degrees. Jimmy Anshaw living the dream. So, quiet day is off the pitch, but on the pitch, we're getting a lovely bit of momentum now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's, what, 2 losses in 11 and only 3 losses since mid-November. So, there's a lot of momentum now on the pitch, and the club's got the squad has improved a lot off the field, certainly, in the training sessions that they must have been doing. Because you can see the plan now every week of what they're trying to do, and it doesn't always work in terms of how we look and how we play, but they are grinding out results. And one of the things that obviously people say about teams when they are near the top of the table is, oh, one of the marks of a good team is to, you know, win when we're not playing well. And they're definitely doing that, I think, at the minute, aren't they?
Yeah, totally. I don't think they're playing fantastic every single week, but their consistency is there now. I think they're about a 7 or an 8 out of what they can get out of that squad realistically every single week. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like, we're not seeing the best performances ever. Certainly, like, the last two away games haven't been, you know, amazing performances. I'm not going to remember them up there in a few years' time as some of the greatest results in Reading history or anything. However, they are playing well enough to get the results. There's definitely more which they can get out of that squad if things go well. But I think, 7-8 is probably a fair reflection of where they're at the minute. They're doing well. They're not perfect, but they've certainly improved a lot from where they were.
Yeah, I mean, for a good period of the season, say the first 15 games or so, they were probably 3 or 4 out of 10 every week at max, wasn't it?
Four would have been generous.
So it is a big improvement. And if you look over the last 15 games, we'd actually be 9th in the league over that, which I would say is a fair amount of time now, because that's almost a third of a season. So
yeah, it's a third of a season, isn't it, 15 games? It's like, I think that's a fair amount of time to, you know, start judging a side on. I don't know where we would be if you looked at, 23 games, which would include a little bit of that, you know, poor run at the start of the season. I don't know where we would be, but that's half a season then if you look back 23 games. And you can't imagine that we're anywhere lower than, like, 14th in that kind of table. And it feels like that's maybe where we are in terms of as a team. We're not a top, you know, top six side in League One, but we're certainly not really a relegation type team either, I don't think, over the course of a long period of games. I feel like we've got enough to kind of justify saying that we should be a mid-table team now in League One. Hopefully, yeah, by the end of the season, we will be.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all the teams above us, there's so many now that we can actually catch, which is a huge bonus. It's not just the ones just above the relegation zone, which we're not in now, which is fantastic. Long way to go. Let's not get too giddy, but we'll take it. Now we move on to off the field action. And Star put out a little bit of a weekly update because they have meetings now with Nigel Howe. Few of the positives. We've all been here for quite a long time. So I always realize what you're all thinking. We're all going to believe it when we see it. And I'm in that group as well. But this is what they said. So moving in the right direction, nearer to exclusivity, but not there yet. Mr. Dye has been centered with all offers and feels positive about at least one of them. Nigel Howe is working hard to ensure that any successful bidder can not only buy the club, but fund it properly going forward. I think what sounds relatively sensible. We have to go in this with extreme caution, don't we? Not towards Star. I'm talking about just selling the club. It's just been such a long process, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, Star are messengers here, right? That's it. The fact that we're getting any kind of update at this point is an improvement on where we were before Christmas, where, you know, everything was kind of just based on rumours and hearsay from what people would say. At least there's some kind of official communication coming out from somewhere, even if it's not, you know, direct from the club itself and it's going through Star. It's better than it was, that communication, which I think is good. As you say, I think the process of the sale is slow. It's a, you know, whatever the price will be, 25, 30 million pounds. It is a multi-million pound sale, ultimately. And these things do take time, which I guess us as football fans don't necessarily appreciate the fact that, you know, if you're buying a club, it's not a quick process. You're not going to rush into it. You're not going to rush into spending £30 million on an asset which is presumably going to lose you £6 million next year straight away. Like, there's not many people out there who are going to jump straight into that with 2 feet. So even the bidders who are interested are going to take their time, aren't they? They're not going to just jump into it straight away without being absolutely sure that that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, obviously those figures that we've just put out there, Alex, it's just all speculation, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sure. Guessing off of like what we've heard over the last 6 months or so. But
yeah, yeah. So obviously off the back of that, Saturday we'll see the first of the three stages of protest events for Sell Before We Die. Tell us more about the one on Saturday against Charlton Athletic, Alex, because clown base, we're all going to be... You know, I'm sure there's a mixed reaction from some of the fans on how it's going to go and everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a concerted effort now to put more pressure on Dai Young, because obviously the wider footballing community are quite aware of the situation with Reading. I think at this point, you know, the tennis ball protests, the fake money at Eastleigh, the pitch invasion, the march. There's been a number of big moments within the kind of Sell Before We Die campaign, I think, which have pushed the knowledge up around the community, around the footballing community. People know what it's about. People understand what the situation is at Reading at this point. So it's not a case of like looking for, you know, a fan of Bolton to understand what's going on at this point. It's more, how can Reading fans put pressure on Dai Young? And basically, one of the ways to do that is make him lose face. And one of the things that has been, I guess, pushed, and one of the things that has been recommended to us is actually, you know, trying to embarrass him and trying to humiliate him is something that is going to get under his skin. So calling him a clown, you know, in business, in life, is something that is not going to go down very well with him, his business partners, etc. So people are being kind of encouraged to pick up a face mask or print a face mask off of the Sell Before We Die website and, you know, get themselves a clown wig. I think Fun and Frolics are doing a discount still in Tilehurst. Like, if you take in your season ticket, so you can get a clown wig very cheaply. And then, yeah, there'll be kind of follow-up protests against Port Vale, and then there's going to be some sort of a London trip later on this month as well to hopefully round off the month. And fingers crossed by that point, there's some potential news on where the sale is going as well.
There's also going to be people giving out clown wigs, and there's going to be like face painting and everything and that kind of stuff there on Saturday, isn't there?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, there's going to be it's not just the thousands of people who want to run on the field who typically, let's be honest, are people, you know, in the age of 18 to 30. I'm generalizing here a little bit, but hopefully people understand what I'm talking about. And actually, there is a lot of kids who come to our games as well who, you know, everybody deserves the right to be able to go and protest, and everybody deserves the right to have their voice heard. However, you know, young or old they are, not everybody agrees with disrupting a game or getting a game abandoned. And that's fair enough. But, you know, the clown protest isn't going to be for you because you don't like it or you think it's weird or embarrassing or whatever, then get involved with something else. Get involved with the red card protest or get involved with the trip to London at the end of the month. There's, you know, there's ample opportunities to kind of put your voice across and have your say. But yeah, as you say, there's going to be face painters situated somewhere outside the stadium. I think Selfoid Eye is going to put that out in terms of where they're going to be located and then handing out kind of a number of wigs and masks to people who want them as well. So hopefully there'll be a, you know, a number of clowns within the crowd on Saturday.
Who would have ever thought we'd be talking about clown masks and face paints on this podcast, Alex? I mean, what point?
I don't know. Given the finances over the last 2 years, maybe it's not that surprising.
No, it isn't. It's a sad state we're in. And hopefully it works out well for everyone. I'll be wearing a wig.
No different to normal.
No, exactly. I dress in my normal outfit. Hey, play the music and laughter. Yeah, I always look like a clown. Yeah. Never good when you have to explain a joke, is it? So let's get back to the on-the-pitch action. What is your prediction for Saturday, Alex?
I think it'll be a tougher game, perhaps, than people are hoping for, because obviously, you know, Charlton are right down there with us, not had a particularly good season. I don't know when they last won a game. It must be months ago at this point. But they've got Nathan Jones in charge now. Maybe there's going to be a bit of a new manager balance. So I feel like a win would be absolutely massive. But I also feel like just not losing the game is also really important on Saturday. So, but with that, I'm going to say 2-0 to Reading. I feel like we've improved a lot defensively recently. What about you? Reckon we'll keep a clean sheet.
I find it hard to believe that we're going to go consecutive matches without conceding. I don't think we've done that this season so far. Obviously, we've had a couple of clean sheets recently, which is lovely to see. I'm going to go 2-1 to Reading, and I'm going to say Sam Smith to, it's not a drought, but a bit of a run without any goals. I still think, as you said on the podcast that you did during the week, Alex, with everyone else, about the game at Stevenage, midweek delight, saying that Smith, even despite the fact that he's not scoring, he's still adding a hell of a lot to the team. Let's not, you know, forget that.
Yeah, I mean, so, the last two goals we've scored have both been because of him, really. Those two only goals over the last two matches.
I think Big Kelv had a little bit to do with the first one.
Yeah, definitely. Some credit to Kelvin as well.
Yeah. I think that'd be a little bit harsh not to take it all from him, wouldn't it? Yeah. So thanks for listening to this part. Let's hope we are talking about another Reading FC win on the podcast on Sunday. I'm now going to pass you over to Matt Lansley, who's talking to a Charlton Athletic fan.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to part two of the Elm Park Rules preview podcast, of course, brought to you by Phantom Brew Co. We're going to take a dip into the opposition now. Charlton coming to the Medeski, or SEL, whatever you want to call it these days. I don't think anyone really knows. A much changed team from when we last played them. When we last played them, they'd sacked Dean Holden and had Michael Appleton in charge. This time, Michael Appleton has just got the axe, and Nathan Jones is the manager. To look into Charlton and kind of what's been going on since we've last played them, I'm joined today by Louis from Charlton Live. How are you doing?
Hey, Matt. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Not too bad. Riding a bit of a wave after Tuesday night, as you could probably imagine. But yeah, it's not happened that much this season, but it's nice when it does. Louis, I think there's probably only one place to start. Michael Appleton sacked, obviously, after the weekend. After a 1-0 defeat at home to Derby, there was some very nasty scenes, though, obviously, in the crowd and everything, and I think he got booed off, heckled off. What went wrong for Michael Appleton at Charlton?
What didn't go wrong, really? He started off quite well, as well, as I'm sure you remember the game you referenced there when we beat you 4-0 was quite early still in his tenure, but he'd had a couple of big home wins when he started. But I think one of the main problems that also befell Dean as well at the start of the season is losing some big players through injury. So as soon as Charlton lose the likes of Chuksaniki and Miles Leeburn up top, then other than Alfie May, who was getting a lot of goals, we actually sort of struggle at that end of the pitch in terms of keeping the ball up. They're a big physical presence. So whilst Michael did start well, that was when he did have those options that he could utilize either off the bench or starting games. So that was part of it. But then also, you know, even when they were out there was still a squad there that you think should have been good enough to pick up better results than he did. And it really seemed to go downhill relatively quickly after those injuries came in. And, you know, I think we were 10 games without a win by the time he left. We were 12 without a win now with Curtis coming in as well in temporary charge. Like there's so many issues that Charlton managers haven't been able to fix over the last few years that he also was unable to fix. I think mainly the defence. I think at one point a couple of weeks ago, we had the second worst defence in the division. I think we've had a good couple of weeks in terms of that we've only conceded one goal in our last two in each of our last two games. So that's slowed down a little bit, but we're still conceding goals for fun. We haven't kept a clean sheet since we last played you in the league, which was back in October. That's 18 games without a clean sheet now. So that's a big part of the problem. Also with Michael, as well as the on-field stuff, unfortunately, he wasn't good at the sort of off-field soft skill stuff and relating with the fans. You know, and it is important to an extent. Like, I'm not one who, you know, if we're winning every week, I wouldn't really care if Michael Appleton was sort of quite quiet and you know, didn't really react much with the crowd and didn't give away much in interviews and that sort of stuff. But when Dean Holden got sacked at the start of the year, he'd actually bought himself a little bit of time with some fans, and no one was really calling for his head because he was good at that. And it does bring the fans on board a little bit, and it does maybe help the morale around the club. But Michael was terrible about it. Like, I got to the extent where I generally thought he actively dislikes quite a lot of fans. Doing interviews with him afterwards, like you'd ask questions that you know fans are talking about. So he was playing Alfie May out wide in the 4-3-3 at times, and asking him that question, because it's a question that all the fans are asking, you could tell he'd get frustrated with that sort of thing. Like, he obviously didn't want to take other people's views into account for that sort of stuff. So yeah, that was part of it. But obviously the results on the field meant his role was completely untenable. He couldn't get anything out of the defence. He couldn't stop conceding late goals, which is, for me, when it happens over and over again, is a bit of a, you know, a question about game management and mentality that he's put into his squad. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the time, he didn't seem to be able to change things that much in games as well. I remember the second last game at Burton. We were 1-0 down at half time and never should have been. Like, we gave away a sloppy goal, but actually we were well on top, and then conceded another sloppy goal at the start of the second half. And then the rest of the game, we just never looked like getting back into it. And he came into the interview after and could say why he thought it was going wrong. I was like, well, why couldn't you change that on the field of play as well? So you do wonder if even the players were listening to him by the end of it. So it was an experiment that went horribly wrong, and really should have been put out of his misery a bit before he was. And yeah, the last game at home where we conceded a last minute goal against Northampton and lost 3-2 was really the culmination of a really sour couple of days where Michael was having questions about his future in the press conferences. It was really quite uncomfortable, and he had become like a massive hate figure. You know, I know you guys have got one of your own at the moment. I'm not saying it's on that level, but for a football manager to be that hated by the supporters, I haven't seen that for a long time. And so, yeah, he should have gone probably a few weeks before he did.
Yeah, no, I can remember a few Reading FC managers that went that way. Yap Stam, Paul Ince kind of come to mind, that things turn pretty toxic under them towards the end of their tenure. I mean, Reading FC fans are well aware and kind of accustomed to last minute losses and kind of dropping points in the last minute. But I mean, you look at that last run of 10 games, really, where Appleton was in charge. I think it's 6 games you lost points in. I think it's the 85th plus minute. You mentioned Northampton, that was 97 minute loss right at the end. Bristol Rovers was a 94th minute loss, Oxford an 85th minute loss, and then Cambridge 2-0 up, 87th, 96th minute goals, Burton 91st minute equaliser in the reverse leg at your place, and Port Vale 3 times you had the lead and then obviously conceded in the 92nd minute to to then eventually draw that game. You talk about things happening again and again and again, but to have 6 games out of 10 which kind of go that way, it's almost inexcusable, I guess, by that last point.
Yeah, I mean, it just got really weird. Like, surely there are elements of game management that people need to understand. So we lost to Derby over the weekend, I don't know how your games with Derby have gone this season, but that was the first time we faced them, and they are industrial, like, to put it kindly. Yeah. Like, they do all the gamesmanship and all that, and. Yeah. You know, our fans were moaning. I said, I'm not being funny, but if we had a little bit of that now, so even half of what they had, then we wouldn't have kept dropping those points. So, you know, either side of Christmas and New Year, that we kept doing late on. And yeah, I mean, it's loads of questions about how the sides see the games out, the sort of character within them, you know, the running those extra yards for the manager when it's late on and you're tired. Or even, like I say, just knowing how to actually do that and being drilled and organized by your manager, and just none of that was happening. You see, talking purely from a football sense, you see teams get sucked into like a death spiral that can be really hard to shake themselves out of, and that's what we find ourselves in now, which is why, obviously, with the new manager coming in Saturday, which I'm sure we'll talk about shortly, Nathan Lyre has, if nothing else, you know, and he's had spells where this hasn't worked for him at other clubs, but he's had spells where it has worked. He's got this sort of energy and this drive that you think, hopefully, that's surely going to get some sort of reaction from them Saturday. And yeah, you'd expect them to be running through brick walls for him, considering the type of character he appears to be. And yeah, there's a lot of Charlton fans very excited to see how that all plays out on Saturday.
Yeah, well, kind of, just last piece on Michael Appleton. Obviously worked at Oxford United, worked at Lincoln City for him, hasn't worked at Blackpool, hasn't worked at you guys and other clubs. It'd be interesting to see where his managerial career goes. But that's enough of Michael Appleton. Let's look to fresh new beginnings now for you. Nathan Jones, I mean, for a League One team, it's got to be seen as quite a coup, to get him. I know Reading were linked with him in the summer as well, and kind of, I think many Reading fans were looking at it and thinking, oh, if we could get Nathan Jones here, brilliant appointment. You know, worked wonders at Luton, hasn't maybe worked at Stoke City and Southampton, probably external factors potentially involved in both those. Obviously Stoke were in pretty much free for all when he joined them, in Southampton, as we kind of know from Ruben Sellers' time there, I mean, that was just a disaster waiting to happen, really. What's the feeling around Nathan coming in? You've talked about excitement. What are you expecting from Nathan Jones?
Yeah, it'll be partly one thing that has worked in his favour is that he worked with us for about a season, maybe 11 years ago, with our youth team, and he won a title with him as well. So he sort of got back in. He's got quite a few people around the club who were there then and who are still around now, who are singing his praises, which is always obviously a very good start for him. But yeah, you're hoping that he's not going to be sort of like a, because, you know, we've gone through, I think Nathan's our 6th manager in 3 years now. Obviously, again, loads of clubs know about this sort of stuff now. It happens to too many of us, and, you know, we go through ridiculous spells. But We're deep down, I really want him to be the man who comes in and repeats the job that he did at Luton, which was an amazing long-term build. You take into account what happened elsewhere, and I kind of hope the reason it didn't work at those other clubs is because of those external factors. You know, and again, we've had plenty of managers come through us who haven't been able to make it work because there's too much mess behind the scenes, and or there has been over the years, and you know, there's still a lot of tidying up that needs doing. Obviously, at the same time, you can look at a Luton that he left twice, and both times he left, they were fine without him. And you can look at that one of two ways. Well, is the club set up really well? Or if you listen to the interview he gave to Sky sort of after the Southampton job, when he was getting ready for his new challenge, he sort of spoke about how, you know, he felt he was the one who helped to lay the groundwork for that. So you could look at it either way, and hopefully it will be the fact that Nathan actually was playing a big part in putting those foundations together for the success that Luton had, and have continued to have. So, yeah, that's what I want long term. I want him to come in and just start afresh with Charlton and rebuild us from the bottom up, because there's still so much to do. You know, we've got these new owners that came in the summer, and they have to admit it's been a bad start. You know, the summer window, even if they came in halfway, left us woefully short in terms of quality in the squad. I don't think the January window's gone particularly well either. We haven't seen any major improvement. Even the players that you sign and you think on paper they're going to be great, like Freddie Ledapo's done nothing yet, which sort of makes no sense to me, because we're signing these players who have done it at this level before. Macaulay Gillespie's got promoted from this level with Plymouth as a defender, but no one's come in and made an impact yet. So I'm still slightly concerned that we've left ourselves a little bit short in terms of the squad. But, you know, Nathan just got to stay up this year. So obviously there is massive short-term incentive for him and us that he has to win games immediately, ideally starting Saturday, because, you know, it's a long time since we've actually picked up 3 points, which is remarkable. We have to go all the way back to the end of October, I think it was, or November, when we beat Cheltenham. So it's 12 games without a win now. So that has to end. But also, just get through these last 2-3 months of the season, then concentrate properly on turning us into the next Luton Town and build sustainably. And, you know, hopefully we're still learning about these owners. I think the fact they've gone out and gotten Nathan Jones is obviously a big tick for them. They've still got to follow up what they can in terms of getting the recruitment right, which hopefully Nathan will play a part in as well now, because it hasn't been great before then. And there's rumour, well, there's stories that the American, sort of the distant American owners, become more involved recently. So hopefully they'll be able to knock into shape some of the issues that have still been around the business and the way the club has been run, you know, that's been going back for years and years, to be fair, before these guys came in.
Yeah. Well, you spoke of that Cheltenham game, your last win. That's the 28th of November, just over 3 months since Charlton last won a game. One player, though, that was very crucial and is kind of a staple, really, in League One, big coup for Charlton in the summer when you got him, was Alfie May. Second highest goal scorer, obviously, in the division, alongside Jamie Reid and behind Avante Cole of Barnsley. What does Alfie May bring to Charlton, obviously, apart from the obvious, which is goals?
Yeah, he's only scored one in his last 8 or 9 as well. So he's on a little bit of a dry patch at the moment. But even then, like, he brings leadership qualities. Like, he's a great talker on the pitch, to the extent that quite during the end of Appleton's reign, quite a few people heard him arguing with Michael Appleton about tactics sort of on near the touchline as well, which was quite interesting, or certainly giving feedback, if not arguing. He brings energy, you know, and I've sort of mentioned like how he's been playing out wide at times under Appleton. So I wasn't one who thought that was as bad as other people made out it was, because he has the ability to drift inside, but he brings that. He does tend to take his chances when he gets them. Obviously, like I said, we sort of dried up our goal scoring chances over the last few weeks. You know, partly because we've sold Corey Blackett Taylor to Derby, which at the time I was a little bit nervous about. I was like, okay, because no one else really creates a great deal for us. But then I thought maybe Ledapo's coming in; he can create stuff for himself. You know, brought in Connor Coventry in midfield, who's deep lying. You think he's going to create stuff? But neither of those two have massively hit the ground running yet, so I'm still hoping they will be able to do that at some point and start to bring Alfie back into games, because when he's in front of goal, when he gets his chances, you expect him to take them, and I feel like they've been few and far between those chances recently. But, you know, at this level he scores goals and for us, and he's never given up or anything like that. He's never shirked, which we've had players who've done that over the years as well. So yeah, he's been a fantastic acquisition for us. And you know, considering his age, he plays like someone who's about 5 years younger as well in terms of the energy.
Well, player you mentioned there, obviously sold to Derby, Corey Blackett Taylor. He's obviously still your second highest goal scorer, obviously, this season with 8 goals, 6 assists. Is that going to be a big miss, obviously, for the rest of the season? It might be stating the obvious a bit, but when you've lost your top, or well, I think he was your top assister and second highest goal scorer, it leaves a big void there, I guess, and really your next top goal scorers are on 3 goals. I think it's Carnu and Leoburn for you guys who are then on 3 goals. Is goals coming from the rest of the squad an issue, maybe?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Miles Leeburn's out injured anyway for the rest of the season, which is obviously a problem. Carney's just signed a new contract today, which is good news. He's sort of like a young and up-and-coming striker. We had to recall him from a loan with Southend. But he has clearly matured this season and grown into his body a little bit more strength. But he would be an option off the bench. But yeah, like I say, I think actually... Whereas as the season's gone on up until the last few weeks, I mean, we've been amongst the highest goal scorers, but that has just dried up the last few weeks. So like Derby on Saturday, we didn't really create much at all. Although, like I say, that was against the Derby side who were camped on the edge of their own 18-yard box. Blackpool, the week before, we scored from a bit of a lucky deflection and then had a couple of chances towards the end, but overall didn't create a great deal. I do think our chance creation has dried up a little bit, especially since Corey's gone. So he will be a massive miss for us. And you're just looking at who you expect to step up. And we've sort of changed shape a little bit ourselves. We've gone to a back three recently with wing backs. And I don't think our wing backs are good enough to create chances for us. Tayo Eden and Tanae Watson. We've just brought in a couple of sort of wide defensive players. Including Kane Ramsey from Harrogate, who on paper we've told is one of the better right wing backs in League Two this season with Harrogate. So we've literally only seen 5-10 minutes of him, and he hasn't had a chance to do anything yet. So hopefully he will aid that, because if we are going to start getting chances into Ladapo and to May, you feel that's where it's going to come from. Like I say, we haven't seen enough in the midfield from that for me. Like George Dobson tends to sit deep when he's fit, because he missed out last week. Connor Coventry sits deep as well. So again, they're not quite connecting with the front two over the last few weeks. So I am concerned about that. But, you know, someone's got to start to step up to the plate. I'm hoping it'll be Freddie to create his own chances. But yeah, Corey going is a massive loss for us, and possibly bigger than we realised. I did think it was a gamble to let him go, considering where we were in the table. And it's just got a lot worse since we have sold him. So... Maybe that money we've got for him, and now the fact that we're not creating chances, might come back to bite us in the backside. But he was out of contract at the end of the season, so they had a decision to make. I'm just worried that they might have, in hindsight, made the wrong one here.
Yeah, no, well, fingers crossed. Obviously, it's not as big a miss as it might seem for you guys for the rest of the season. Any other players to pick out, really, to keep an eye on? I know, obviously, George Dobson for you guys has been almost pivotal in the middle of the field, played pretty much every minute this season. I think the only game or minutes he's missed, I think, was a few minutes at Exeter where he was subbed off. Anyone else, really, to pick out?
I was just looking at our last couple of lineups, and to be honest, there's generally no one in there. Like I said, you know what, he's playing really well at the moment. Possibly Tariq Backinson. I wouldn't go out and say he's played really well. What he does bring is a little bit of energy, a little bit of carrying the ball forward into the midfield, which again we have been lacking. But there's not been a single moment that Tariq's been involved in where I've gone, oh, brilliant, he's effectively set up a goal out of nothing there. So let's get it straight. We're not playing well at the moment. You know, like the run we're on is massively concerning. I think even the hangover from Michael leaving is going to take a few weeks to shake off. And like I say, like Nathan, he's done this before. He went into a Luton side that were on the way down in League Two and kept him up that season. He obviously got something out of them in that second half of that season before getting them into the playoffs the next year and then promoted the year after. So... He has to sort of liven them up a little bit. But yeah, honestly, looking at our squad list, there's players in there that on their day, you think, yeah, he could do something. But at the moment, no one's playing massively well. So I generally can't add many more to that list for you.
Well, let's just hope the Reading centre-backs can mark Alfie May out the game and restrict Ladapo, because, yeah, but to be honest, anything might happen with a new manager in charge. There are, of course, three Reading FC or ex-Reading FC players playing for Charlton at the moment. Tyrell Thomas, remember him, played about 2-3 games for us. He's currently at Charlton, I think playing centre-back currently for you guys, or has done the last few weeks. Tenai Watson, right back or right wing back, and also Michael Hector. I think he's dropped out of the team of late, though, or since early January. So I'm not sure.
Injured.
Okay, fair enough. So it's likely to see Thomas and Tenai Watson for those on Reading FC or ex Reading FC player watch this weekend. Louis, this weekend, Obviously, away from home, very much similar story to Reading, really. Abysmal away from home, I think, is probably one of the best ways to put it. One win for you away from home. I think it was Wigan away on the 31st of October was your last away win. Seven draws as well, six losses. What's your hopes going to be going to the Mad Stad this weekend?
Everyone's building it up massively for us. So we've sold out our away and we're taking 3,000. Obviously, it's not a massive long trip, but we don't tend to do that outside of London much. So that's going to be great, because when we get a sold out away end, that's going to be great. Nathan Jones is going to bring some energy and some passion and something for the fans to get behind, minimum. So people are building this up as this is going to be the start of the turnaround. So I can feel it to an extent as well. I can feel us going there and getting something. So I think we might nick it. 2-1. Comeback starts here.
the Nathan Jones revolution is on. Well, Reading FC obviously in great form, coming off a great win in the week. I said on your podcast that you could probably pick a result out of the hat, to be honest. It's new manager bounce, whether you believe it or not. It often ends up obviously throwing up spurious results. If we get a draw, I think I'll be content. I might go with you though and just go the other way, go for a 2-1 home win. Potentially that might be the first time I think I've actually predicted a win on this podcast for quite some time. That's not a good sign. I might have just completely jinxed Reading SC there. Predictions don't matter, as we know. They're completely pointless.
But that's Louis, the power of a midweek win, isn't it? You win on Tuesday and you think, right, we're winning every game now for the rest of the season.
It's the fickleness of football fans, and I'm not even going to say that I'm not fickle, because I am. When it comes to football, people that know me will kind of know and be able to associate me with that anyway. So Louis, thank you very much though for joining us today. Best of luck obviously for the rest of the season, and you guys, hopefully you can pull yourself out of that relegation scrap, hopefully not at the expense of Reading, but we'll have to wait and see for that. Are you going to be at the game at the weekend actually?
Yeah, I'm there. I'll be in the press box. Really looking forward to it. Yeah, it should be a good game.
Brilliant. Well, safe trip down and everything. Best of luck for the rest of the season. And thank you, everybody, obviously, for listening. If you have enjoyed it, be sure to give us a 5-star rating on your podcast of choice. Really does help us in podcast rankings and everything. Keep an eye on our socials. Go give them a follow. Keep up to date with all the latest Elm Park Royals content and Reading FC content. We will be back reviewing the Charlton game on Sunday. So until then, I've been Matt Lanzi, and this has been the Elm Park Royals Preview Podcast. Catch you on the next one.